Welcome to Belfast City Vineyard, where we are pursuing formation in the presence of Jesus, community gathered around him, and the impact he empowers us to bring in our families, city, and the world. The following message was given at one of our Sunday services. For more information, visit our website at belfastcityvineyard.com.
Great. Well, if you've not met before, my name's Andy, and I'm one of the team here, and we are in a series on the Psalms, and we have a summer club celebration, so I'm going to need to be brief, which some of you will know if you've been around a long time. I'm going to need a miracle, so you can begin interceding for me now. I'm going to set a timer, and when it goes off, we're done, no matter how far we are. There we go. Started. Well, again, it's great to be with you. Hi to everybody online. We have had a wonderful summer club. Thank you to everyone who gave of your time and to serve and all that stuff. It's beautiful and wonderful, and you will hear more in just a few moments' time from people, from children and young people. It's going to be great. So be ready to welcome them and pay attention to them and stuff like that. I know when I talk, you check Facebook and, you know, go to the toilet and all that stuff. So, like, I stand here and I can see you. I can see what you do. I know you don't think that's true, but it is true. Anyway, well, we need to get moving. I'm not starting off very well. As I have said, we are in a series on the Psalms. Anyone memorized one of the Psalms we've done? Anybody done any work on there? A couple? I don't have any Haribo to give you. It's actually brought a lot of life to our community as we've spent the summer in the Psalms. And we all believe that we were made for God and his presence and life, and we actually have hunger and thirst for him. That's something placed in us in Eden, actually. And the book of Psalms talks an awful lot about this thirst for God's presence and how we often come to the end of ourselves and we've tried everything else out there to quench our thirst, to satisfy the longing of our hearts, only to realize that it's only the living God and his ways that will actually satisfy us. And the Psalms lead us to living water found in Jesus. And last week, Sarah Crawford did a great job with Psalm 46, and she called it a psalm for people under pressure. So if you're under pressure and you missed that talk, you should go back and listen to that on our website. And today we're going to be in Psalm 34. So if you have a Bible, you can turn there. Some of the words of the psalm will be up on the screen. If you have a phone, you can flip over there, however that works. And we'll be in Psalm 34. It's a wonderful psalm. It's a treasure for the poor to find. And it's famous for verse 8 that says, of course, taste and see that the Lord is good. It's also a powerful psalm for those who grieve, because verse 18 reminds us that the Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. So we want to dive into this. Again, it's going to be a little bit shorter than usual, but you can go home today and spend some time in it, and all of its treasures will be revealed to you and discover this week how God is speaking to you through Psalm 34. All right, really important about this psalm. This is an amazing psalm. We got to talk about its context, and we have to talk about its design. Okay? So the context is it's a psalm attributed to King David from when he was afraid and on the run with enemies on all sides. So if you're afraid, if you're on the run and you feel like you have enemies, then this psalm is for you. And if you have like a real Bible like we used to use and all that stuff, you see that many of the psalms have headings that they attribute who wrote the psalm, and maybe a little bit of context too and stuff like that. And Psalm 34, here's the heading for it. It says, of David when he pretended to be insane before Abimelech, who drove him away and he left. And this is the song that came out of his heart. So there's that little heading there. There's a problem with that little heading. I don't know if you know the problem with this heading. But if you go to 1 Samuel chapter 21 to find the moment when David was actually there, he's fleeing from King Saul, who wants to kill him, and so goes to a place called Gath, which is where the Philistines, the ancient enemy of God's people Israel, were, and there's a Philistine king there, and so David's kind of hiding out in enemy territory, but he's discovered, and he's afraid for his life, and he comes up with his own solution. Instead of trusting God, he says, I know what I'll do. I'll pretend to be insane and see how that goes. And anyway, he goes, you know, the people say to this Philistine king, you know, David, the mighty warrior of Israel, our enemy's here. And he's like, I've got enough crazy people around me, just drive him away. And that's how it kind of goes. But the problem is, if you flipped over to 1 Samuel chapter 21, you'll see that the king's name is Achish, not Abimelech. In fact, Abimelech features in Genesis. And this is like long time after Genesis. So is the Bible wrong? Did somebody make a mistake? Is it like one of these YouTube videos that it's like, aha, gotcha, Christianity is false or something like that? Well, here's some things you need to understand. Abimelech was like a royal name for Philistine kings, and that would have been passed down kind of like the name Windsor, that, you know, is like a royal name passed down. Anyway, also biblical writers are doing something very, very sophisticated here. They were way more creative than we give them credit for. The name Abimelech does appear twice in Genesis and in the time of Abraham and Isaac, the patriarchs. And like David, they had time in a foreign land. They were afraid for their lives, and instead of trusting God, they did their own thing. And what they did is they pretended their wives were their sisters. And you can read all about that in Genesis. But anyway, why did they change that name or just use that royal name Abimelech? Well, one of the reasons is the psalm wants us to meditate not just on not giving in to fear and running to God as a refuge. It wants us to think about that in the lives of the patriarchs. It wants us to think about that in the lives of David. So it gives you like a hyperlink back. It's really, really interesting. So also, this psalm was not written when all was perfect. It's written under extreme pressure, and it wants you to think about that. In 1 Samuel chapter 22, David's driven away from the lands of the Philistines, and it says that he escaped to the cave of Adullam. It's like a stronghold. And his brothers and his household hear about it. They went down to him, but then it says everyone who was in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around him. So that's his mighty army. The distressed, in debt, and discontented. So it's not exactly, you know, he's just surrounded by hard things, you know, and he's in this cave, and he's supposed to be king, and that dream now feels dead to him, and he's probably asking, where is God? He's overcome by fear, enemies on all sides, and then this psalm comes out of this place. And the commentator J.M. Boyce says it's for people who find themselves at the absolute low point in life, which is where David was, or find themselves between a rock, which is in this case was King Saul, and a hard place, which was King Achish. It is for you when everything seems against you. So that's the context, but also the design of the psalm. Really important. It's a teaching psalm. You'll notice if you go through it, it's not addressed to God. It's addressed to others. It's like trying to teach us about God's goodness and deliverance. And then it's kind of hidden in plain sight, but this is what they would call an alphabet psalm or an acrostic poem, okay? And what that means is each verse, okay, begins with a successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So you can't tell in English because we're reading it in English and it's translated. But if you were reading this in Hebrew, you would see it. Like it goes through the ABCs of the Hebrew alphabet verse by verse. It's very creative. There's a number of psalms that are acrostic poems and they do that. And like, why do they do that? Well, one, if you have to remember, when these were being cooked up and stuff like that, it was an oral culture being passed down. And so it was a memory aid. But also, it's trying to communicate something. So if I said to you, this book here is like the A to Z of plumbing, you would think, well, that book has just about everything you need to know about plumbing, right? That's what you would think, right? Well, when those who are crafting the alphabet psalms are doing this, what they're trying to tell you is this is an A to Z of what the psalm is trying to say. So it's an A to Z of God's faithfulness and goodness. This is everything you need to know about that, and you should think a lot about this. So David's in trouble. He's given into fear, but he wants everybody to know that God is good, that he is a refuge. And so these aren't just nice poems. These are songs that you can build your life upon. And I wonder what would happen if we made this psalm the vision and anchor of our lives. So let's just move through as much of it as we can. And it begins in a very, very interesting place. And again, from that place of pressure, enemies hunting him down. He's supposed to be king. He's already been anointed as king. God said, you're going to be king, but he's actually hiding in a cave. And instead of saying, where is God? God has done me wrong. God wasn't there for me. What he says is something really, really striking. I will extol the Lord at all times. His praise will always be on my lips. So worship for David is a choice. But it's more than a choice. It's a way. It's like a path and a source of life, even at the darkest times. It's a declaration of where our hope and our refuge actually is, and it changes things. And he goes on to say exactly that in verses 2 and 3. He says, I will glory in the Lord. Let the afflicted hear and rejoice. What are they hearing? Worship. Glorify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. So what happens to the afflicted? They rejoice when they hear worship. And when they are in worship. And I really, really love that, because worship causes us to look to Jesus more than our circumstances, doesn't it? Those moments when we're together in worship, our hearts and our eyes are lifted up above what's going on with us. And our Vineyard heritage is, of course, is we aren't just singing together to manufacture emotional response or to hold hands and sing kumbaya and feel good about ourselves or something like that. But we believe that when God's people worship him, he actually draws near. His presence comes. And we encounter the living God and he ministers to us, especially when we do that together. So worship is this safe place for David and for us. Worship is this place of encounter. Worship is a place where we're rejuvenated. Worship is a place of refuge for all of us. But certainly, if you are afflicted, if you are struggling, if you are hurting, worship is a stronghold for you to gather to. And it's an incredibly powerful thing. And if you're a man here, I just want you to just reflect this afternoon on the fact that David was a warrior king. He could take you. I guarantee it. And he has worship in his heart. What is in your heart? And many of us, we have had hard things happen to us. We have hard things happening to us right now. And if we're honest, emotionally, the last place we want to be is in worship. What if we let Psalm 34 lead us to life? That when we are afflicted, when we are wounded, when we are devastated, actually the place we need to be is in worship. And we become revived in the presence of the Lord. And a way is made that we can do one more hour. We can do one more day. We can endure suffering just a little bit longer because we've run to the stronghold. We're in the presence of the Lord. And we are afflicted, but we are rejoicing because we hear and resonate with the sounds of worship and we're strengthened and revived. Verse 4 of Psalm 34 talks about seeking the Lord, actively looking to him for help. Are we looking to him for help for life? Are we looking to other things that are really, really good but can never satisfy us? Verse 5 of 34, I told you, we're going to go fast. This might be my favorite verse in the Psalm because it says, those who look to him are radiant. Their faces are never covered with shame. Who or what you look at or look to affects you powerfully, even physically. And when we cry out and we look to him first, even in the place of fear and doubt and we don't know what to do, we are not put to shame. And we've talked all along in this series how Jesus haunts the Psalms. They prophetically, even though they came long before he walked this earth, they prophetically point to him. And what does Hebrews chapter 12 verse 2 say? It says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and this sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. Who or what has your attention? Who or what has your gaze? What are you looking at? And many of you, you've suffered through grief and illness and pain and difficult circumstances. And you might feel on the inside like I am crushed and defeated, but to others you are actually radiant. Like the glory of the Lord is like reflected off of you because you kept your gaze on him. Others of us, we're really hungry and we're really thirsty and we have been just journeying in places, you know, things that just do not satisfy, and we're hungry and we're thirsty. And what if we looked and followed the lead of Psalm 34 and looked to Jesus, who on the cross paid for our sin and paid for our shame. What if we set our gaze on him and sought him and said yes to him? You will be radiant. You will be bold with a hope and joy for a future despite what you face now. So it moves on. Where do I run to? Let's talk about that. Verse 8, again, it's one of the most famous verses in the Bible, to taste and see that the Lord is good, and blessed is the one who takes refuge in him. When it says taste and see, it's in the imperative tense, which means that's a command. So to try him out, taste him and see, do that, build your life on him. It's like a summary, controlling verse of the whole psalm, teaching us that the Lord and his ways are good and good for us, and we need to step into them. We need to taste them and see and try them out. And so, like, what are you building your life on is a real live radioactive question in this psalm. Well, I'm betting on that he's good, and that's what David was betting on. And it says, blessed is the one, very well off is the one who chooses to take refuge in him. And maybe today, one of the questions before the kids comes in that you can let roll into your mind and heart and your spirit is, where are you looking to refuge? What is your stronghold right now? Where do you run to? And is it healthy and is it good? And is it Jesus and his kingdom? Are you looking to him for life? Are you building rhythms of prayer and the scriptures and worship into your life to keep him as a refuge, or are you not? The image I had, it may or may not work, let's just see if it does this week, was of Jesus. Is Jesus like the apple greens? Like you're going down the motorway and you need some food or you need a break or whatever, and you just do this pit stop and you're refreshed and you're fueled and then you move on. And you just go on the rest of your life, and the apple greens exists, you know, somewhere out there in the ether or on a motorway somewhere. Or is he a refuge that you run to and cling to and you stay in? In verse 9, it says, part of tasting and seeing is fearing the Lord. Fearing the Lord. Fear the Lord, you his holy people, for those who fear him lack nothing. Fearing the Lord is a common term in the Bible, and it does not mean cowering in fear of the Lord or God is an angry tyrant wanting to destroy you. You are loved with an everlasting love, but those who turn to God through Jesus, his son, also aren't flippant about that. They're aware of the holiness and the awesomeness of God. And in response, they don't run from him, but they surrender to him and they obey him and they pursue holiness and they pursue his way. And in response to his holy goodness, they then build their lives around him. And those people, Psalm 34 says, lack nothing. And of course, that makes you want to think of Psalm 23, where the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. And then very interestingly, he says, come, my children, gather around me. Do you want to know what the fear of the Lord is? Do you want the good life in verses 11 to 12? Do you want the good life for yourself? Do you want the good life for your family? Then fear the Lord. Fear the Lord. And what does that look like? Well, he tells you in verses 13 and 14, keep your tongue from evil and your lips from telling lies. Turn from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. And these are summary statements for walking in obedience and holiness and leaving the things that God hates behind. And it's not just saying that we serve and we love him, but practicing it as a way. Jesus' words to his disciples and to us was, follow me and take on my way of doing life. And so Psalm 34 is like prophetically pointing to the Messiah Jesus, the Lord, who would say, follow me towards the path of life. And verse 14, of course, says, pursue it. It's a command. Pursue that. Do something about it. Chase after it. Seek after it. And if you are following Jesus today, are you seeking him? Are you pursuing him with everything you have? Or are you letting apathy and letting busyness or past pain get in your way? And if you're not a follower of Jesus, well, today might be your day to come to him and find life. And if you want to find the good life, if you want to find many good days, as the psalm says, you will find those in Jesus. Turn to him and turn from other things and do that today. And verses 15 to 16 say again how the Lord is a refuge for you. His eyes are upon you, his ears will hear you, and his face is turned towards you and against those who wish to harm you. Again, if you are not following Jesus yet, and if you're wondering if he is real, the God who created you sees you, He hears you, and he's pursuing you, and he's a refuge for you to run to. And I would say turn to him, and in a moment we're going to give you a chance to do that. He is with us. He is with us. I want to end by talking about truth and tension. And so far, Psalm 34, if you read it through in its entirety, it's teaching about God's goodness and protection and his deliverance. And it is very confident in that, and it teaches those things really robustly, and it is entirely true. But it is also honest, because in its enclosing verses, it talks about tension. And in verse 18 that I already read out, the Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit, which implies that those things can happen to us and probably will happen to us in this life. That God is a deliverer, but we also might end up being brokenhearted and feel like we've been crushed in our spirit. And some of you have been crushed and you feel like you're in despair, and your question is, where was God? Or where was God? And verse 19 talks about it even more explicitly. It says, the righteous person may have many troubles, but the Lord delivers him from them all. Psalm 34 points us to the goodness and deliverance of God and instructs us and anchors us in the goodness and deliverance of God, but it acknowledges the tension. You know, we need all of Scripture and we need all of the Psalms. And some of the Psalms are for when God feels far away, or it feels like he didn't rescue us when we thought he should, or he didn't rescue those we love, or when we're feeling anger at our circumstances or people that hurt us or our seeming lack, or we're even just angry straight up at God. And many Psalms allow us to express all the range of emotions that you and I feel and all of the tension. And even Psalm 88 is a harrowing psalm, because it's the only psalm in 150 psalms that never resolves the tension. It never says God is good. It doesn't answer the questions. It leaves us lingering in questions. Painful questions born of deep grief. We had two quotes that are really important about the Psalms at the start. John Goldengay says, the Psalms make it possible to say things that are otherwise unsayable. In church, they have the capacity to free us to talk about things we can't talk about anywhere else. And then, of course, most of Scripture speaks to us. The Psalms speak for us. Athanasius said that very, very powerfully. We need to pray the Psalms. We need all the Psalms. We need the Psalms that allow us to go to the extremes and express everything that's in our hearts. But we also need Psalms like Psalm 34 that are like what I call anchor Psalms. They allow us to go places, but then they bring us back and they anchor us in God's goodness. When I was a little kid, I don't know why I thought of this, but my parents lost the run of themselves and they bought me one of those inflatable punching bags that would be about this tall, and they had like sand or a weight in the bottom, and you'd punch them and they would go over and just come right back up. Anyone ever have one of those? I had one. It was Darth Vader was mine. And I don't know why I remember this, and I don't know why it came to me this week, except that Psalm 34 is like one of those kinds of things, okay? It allows us to go way to the extremes, but it always brings us back upright and anchors us in the truth. And so when the storms and the grief and the rage and the anger and the emotions hit us, we can bend but not break. And it draws us back to truth, and it helps us, again, return upright by anchoring us in the truth of God's goodness, that worship is a safe place where the afflicted find joy, that God is our refuge. We fear him, not our circumstances. His eye is upon us. And then verse 22, the last verse of our psalm, the Lord will rescue his servants. No one who takes refuge in him will be condemned. And that tells you that no matter what's going on in your life right now, no matter how you feel, the story isn't over yet. And Psalm 34 is an anchor psalm because it gives you perspective and brings you back to radical truth in Jesus. And we need it, especially when we feel out of control. We need to be brought back to true reality that acknowledges our pain, it acknowledges mystery, it acknowledges the horror that sometimes we face in this world, but it points us to a God who endured the horror of the world on the cross to bring hope and forgiveness and mercy and ultimate victory at the end of all things, when every tear will be wiped away and our healing is complete and our longings are fully satisfied, because you will see him face to face. So Psalm 34 anchors you in truth that because of Jesus, your story isn't over yet. Because of what he did for you and for me on the cross, because of his faithfulness that will last forever. So somehow he's going to make a way where there isn't a way. When we're heartbroken and we have a crushed spirit, that he's near and he offers you your refuge and no condemnation. And somehow he'll make all things new.
Thanks for listening to this message. For all the latest information about what's happening in the life of our church, or if you have any questions or comments, head over to BelfastCityVineyard.com.